From WJCT in Jacksonville, Florida, I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
I'm Sean Birch.
And this is Deemable Tech, episode 103. Guess who's back? Back again. Sean is back. Tell a friend.
I'm back. The Deemable Tech podcast is brought to you by A Small Orange, homegrown hosting, a refreshingly different approach to web hosting, on the web at asmallorange.com.
And by Pants. See how pants are making your world a greener, brighter place on the web at pantscouncil.org.
Why don't you go jump on iTunes or Stitcher, subscribe to our podcast, and leave us a review.
Just jump right on it.
Just jump on it. Like
jump.
Like surprise it. Ambush it.
Now, we're not saying jump on your computer.
No.
No.
Not a good idea.
iTunes.
Yeah. Just on the iTunes. And you know, how many stars? I'm thinking of a number of stars between 1 and 5. Sean? You have a guess?
Oh, I'm going to go
Wait, what are we guessing? 5 stars.
5 stars. That's
five
the number.
Stars,
that
yeah.
was the number.
That's the one we want.
That's the one. Yes. 5 stars. That's the number to put on your review. Talk about us. Say good things.
Even
remember.
If you don't believe it. Yeah. Just do it anyway.
But you know, they say the first step in believing something is to you know, act it out.
To say it out loud.
Yeah. Yep.
So this is your first step on believing that Deemable Tech is an amazing podcast.
No, we really do hope that you enjoy the show, and we do appreciate it when you leave a review.
Yes,
that helps us get pushed up in iTunes. More people can find us.
That's right.
That's right.
And hey, listeners, another thing you can do to help us is help us decide what news stories we talk about on each episode. Go to our Reddit page and submit stories that you think we should cover and vote other stories up or down. It's this whole little communication thing. We want interaction with you guys. We want to hear what you want to hear. So just go to deemable.com/Reddit and submit a story.
Speaking of communication, I have a question. I'm raising my hand. You can't see it because it's a podcast.
Okay. I can attest to that.
Ray, you have 2 iPhones.
I do.
In front of you.
I do.
Why do you have 2 iPhones?
Because I got a new iPhone 6S.
Oh.
It's shiny and it's gold.
Is that gold?
It is gold.
And maybe it's the lighting.
It's sort of a dark silver.
Yeah, I can't really
tell. Oh, it's gold. Yeah, the lights are kind of yellow in here. But we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
Calm down. It's okay. I know you want to see the pretty iPhone.
Yeah, you know me.
We'll talk about it later on the show. Now let's take a look at this week's rundown.
The Washington Post reports that Facebook turned on its safety check feature for a man-made disaster for the first time last weekend for the attacks in Paris. Mm. With safety check, users who are in an area affected by a disaster who log into Facebook are greeted by a message asking them if they are safe. If they indicate that they are, a status update is then posted to their wall, letting their friends and family know. Facebook said that about 4.1 million users checked in within 24 hours after the attack, about one-third of metropolitan Paris's population. Safety check has been deployed on 5 previous occasions, including the earthquake in Nepal in April, tropical cyclone Pam in the South Pacific, and typhoon Ruby in the Philippines. It was originally inspired by the aftermath of the 2011 Japanese tsunami. Facebook has drawn criticism because it has not deployed the feature for several recent disasters in the Middle East, including for the double suicide bombings in Beirut just a day earlier.
Mm.
Facebook says that it plans to deploy the tool more frequently in the future.
That's good. I'm glad they jumped on the bad press that they were getting that quickly.
Mm.
You know, I really think it's great because, again, Facebook is the way that most people communicate. I mean, it's how we get in touch with people nowadays. So that's really good. I wonder, is it that popular in the Middle East, in these places where they're getting criticism for not doing this?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure from Facebook's business perspective, a lot of this is driven by we have a lot of users in Paris versus Beirut.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But at the same time, it's kind of a very Western-centric approach to be like, oh, you know, Paris, we're worried about Beirut.
Yeah, you know, and I was talking to somebody about this, too. Here's the thing. And Beirut didn't get as much press as Paris did, obviously. But, you know, we're talking about a war zone versus a first world country.
Yeah.
You know,
Beirut's not technically a war zone. It's not
a
great
it's
place.
It's pretty close, and there's been a lot of bombings throughout this whole year. So, you know, it's not a shock to hear that there was a bombing in Beirut. It's kind of shocking to hear that there was a bombing in France.
Yes, I agree with that very much.
But that being said, this is still a very powerful tool that Facebook can implement, and I hope they do implement this in places even where it is common.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, where there is war constantly. Make it so that people can let their friends and family know that stuff's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm just surprised by that number. 4.1 million users checked in. That's amazing.
Yeah. That's pretty great.
And yeah.
I know there were a lot of moms that were probably like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Washington Post article actually linked to another Washington Post article, if you kind of follow the rabbit trail.
Mm-hmm.
But they had actually focused in on one particular girl who was, I think, an exchange student who had been in Paris, and then she had gone off to some other European country. So she wasn't in the city at the time at all.
Mm.
Oh. But she was, like, you know, being bombarded with messages from people, and then she goes onto Facebook, and it's like, yes, please set your check safe, you know?
Yeah.
Let people know, because they're really worried about you.
Mm. Oh.
So it's really nice and simple tool.
How does it tell that you're in France, or how did it tell that people were in France based on their GPS on their phones?
That's
or...
a good question. I don't know the answer.
Yeah, that was my guess, but maybe, I don't know. Maybe it goes by where you're checking in or something like that.
Probably.
Because I'm thinking like the last time I was out of the country was before smartphones were still a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I imagine like, I turned my phone off when I was over there last time because I was only there for a couple of weeks. So I'm wondering how it would know, because I'm not going to post on my Facebook wall that I'm going to another country.
I'm sure if you get on Facebook with your phone, it's like, hey, GPS, I know where you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And they could do that too on the desktop too, because the IP address is going to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that was the most frustrating thing, is every time I went to Google, it would redirect me to the Netherlands. I'm like, I don't speak Dutch. Give me regular Google.
Give me the real Google.
Well, speaking of the internets, that's a great transition.
Yeah.
One of the dangers of buying something online is that it could be a dud. I've experienced that a few times.
Mm.
And this can be especially a problem if you buy things from some random website.
Mm. Amazon.com.
Amazon.com, that's one you should avoid. But sometimes even products from Amazon can be lemons.
Mm.
And the reviews, which are often written by less than tech-savvy customers, don't always save the day.
Okay.
Well, one very tech-savvy customer is doing everything he can to change that.
Hmm.
Gizmodo reports that a Google engineer is buying USB-C cables off of Amazon, testing them, and reviewing them. And not just testing them, like plugging them in to make sure they work, like literally taking them apart and testing them, checking the wires, checking the connections, checking the specifications to make sure that they do their job.
Now, USB-C, we were talking about this with the artist last week, is the new reversible standard.
Exactly. It's the new standard, and it is fantastic if it works correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So Benson Leung, he's a Google Chromebook engineer, specifically an engineer on the Chromebook Pixel team, which, no surprise, has a USB-C port on it. So that may be why he was interested in it so much. From his experience, good USB-C cables are hit or miss.
Oh.
And unfortunately, it doesn't seem to matter if they are name brand or not. He's found some name brands that are terrible. He found one that was interesting where if you use it with the same brand product, it's fine. But if you use it with any other device, it will mess it up.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's found some cables with the wrong wiring, the wrong resistors, and some that will completely just burn out your charger, USB hub, or your mobile device because they're not following the specs.
Nice.
That sounds good.
So, yeah. It's unfortunate. It happens often with new specs, you know, that the companies won't do it right or might mess something up or might, you know, skip a step or, you know, do it easier. So you can follow Benson. You can read his reviews on Amazon. We'll include a link to his Amazon profile and a link to his Google Plus page because he worked for Google. So, of course, he has a Google Plus page.
Somebody has to.
I would not have guessed that.
They're the only ones who use Google Plus.
Yeah,
I've heard.
Well, let's move on from Google to, let's try Microsoft for a little bit.
Okay.
You guys
know
Microsoft? I was just in Seattle. I saw Microsoft headquarters there.
Very cool.
Did you go to Microsoft headquarters?
No, I drove by it.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, yep, that's Microsoft.
You met Bill Gates, of course.
Yep, ran into
Seattle.
That's what happens. He just stands on the street corner and he waves and everything. Anyway, Microsoft. So this is actually kind of a sad time for Microsoft.
Oh.
And specifically for people out there that love Microsoft's Zune audio players.
Who is that?
I'm sure they're out there. No offense to them. I'm sure they're out there.
No, I believe it. There's probably like, there's a cult following, you know, the hardcore Zune.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
The Zuneites.
I've only met one person that has one, so.
Yes.
Or had one.
Yeah. But PC World is reporting that Microsoft officially shut down all Zune-related services this week, including the Zune Music Pass. It's a streaming subscription service that they had. And the Zune Marketplace, where you could buy MP3s.
Oh.
Yeah, they shut those down. Anyone still subscribed to the Zune Music Pass was automatically switched to Microsoft's new Groove Music service.
Ooh, Groove.
So if you had one and you forgot to cancel it or something, you're now a member of Groove Music.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Right. As for the MP3s, hopefully this doesn't happen to any of our listeners, but if any of the music they bought through the Zune Marketplace had DRM on it, it sadly might not work after a while because the license can't be renewed.
Ever.
Wonderful.
Ever. So, yeah, hope that doesn't happen to you. It's been a while since music has had DRM on it. They kind of stopped.
You've had a couple years to switch over. So burn out the CDs and rip it back, man. That's how you got to do it.
Now, Microsoft did
I guess,
did
say, that would work,
Yeah, that's true. Microsoft did say, like, all the Zune products are still going to keep working. So if you have a Zune player and it has music on it, you can still get music off of there. You can still listen to it and everything. But you won't be able to stream music through it or buy MP3s from them anymore. I have to say it's taken a surprisingly long time for Microsoft to kind of get rid of the Zune name and stop these services. According to what I read, the company stopped making Zune hardware back in 2011.
Wow.
Like, that was the last time they released any new Zune players. And they kept using the brand name for a few years before they switched to using Xbox as the brand name for things. So like Xbox Music or something like that.
Coming from actually a programming background, it doesn't completely surprise me because Microsoft has so much legacy stuff they wind up having to support that, they always have users that are like, I'm still on, you know, Windows XP.
That's true.
So when did Zune, how long has it been? How many years?
I think it started in 2006 is when they released their first product. I
mean, it was a response to the, the iPod.
Yeah. Yeah. Give you some history that, Apple came out with the iPod. It was a huge success. Microsoft, of course, wanted to come out with something. So they started releasing the Zune audio players.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar looking to iPods, especially the first ones.
Sure.
But it just never caught on.
Hmm.
Like we were saying, I only know one person that has one.
The Zune Brown, man. I mean, that was just...
That's
beautiful. It's a beautiful, beautiful device.
So I guess this kills the dream of the Zune phone.
Yep. I don't think the Zune phone's ever going to come out now. I just don't think it's going to happen.
So we can officially put a death date on Zune. It was November 15th. 2015.
Yeah.
Wow. Very symmetrical.
You know, when did they stop selling Zune is what I'm curious about. The Zune devices.
Well, I
do know that.
What's that?
June 2012.
Really?
Yep.
That was the last time
So actually, that's less time than it took, or no, more time than it took for HP to kill WebOS services.
Mm-hmm.
They killed the WebOS in August of 2011. And it was March of this year that they killed it. So about the same time frame, actually. Yeah.
Ray, I'm impressed.
Right in there. Yeah.
You work really hard to weave WebOS and Palm into every every podcast.
That's true.
I was sitting there thinking like, oh, they're talking about an archaic thing that nobody used. This is the perfect time to bring up WebOS.
And listeners, this is more impressive. Maybe you think that, you know, Ray plans this out in advance, but we write these up right before we record, so he doesn't have a chance.
Yep. I am that passionate about WebOS
at all.
And Palm.
This actually makes me think, now, while I was gone, I visited my parents for a little while, and my dad has actually bought a Pono player. I think that's how you say
it. Oh, the Pono.
The Neil Young audio player that came out.
That triangular thing.
Yeah, it's very strange.
I remember that.
And it's the same thing. As soon as I picked it up, it actually, I will say, it works well. Sure. You know, it sounds good. That's the big thing with this is it's supposed to be high definition audio. It's all FLAC files, if you know what those are. But as I was using it, I was just like, this seems like a Zune. This isn't going to catch on. I feel like it's going to stick around for maybe a few years and then it's going to die. And, you know, I think one of the big things, the big criticisms of that is nobody really uses a standalone player anymore.
They really don't.
No. Yeah. Everybody uses their phone and they stream to it.
Right, right. Yeah. I got nothing.
Yeah.
Well, from Microsoft back to Google, we have a story. And shouts out to Redditor BHK123 for suggesting this.
Oh. Which you can do by going to reddit.com/r/deemable and submitting a story. Or you can vote other stories up or down.
Ding!
There you go.
There we go.
Got to get that plug in there.
Anyways, Google Search app is about to get better at understanding complex questions. According to VentureBeat, a new update to the Google Search app allows it to better understand superlatives, ordered items, and dates. And you're like, what? What does that mean?
I forgot what a superlative is. I should know that.
That's like most likely to succeed, I guessed.
Yeah.
I guessed.
You're guessing?
I'm guessing. As an example, Google suggests the question, who was president when the Angels won the World Series? So Google will actually take this question and break it down. They'll figure out that you're talking about U.S. presidents and baseball, and combine the two to return the correct answer, which actually is George W. Bush.
Oh.
Points if you knew that.
All right. I did not know that.
No. So I don't know about you guys, but I thought we could test this out with our phones and our Google apps.
Oh, yep.
I'm going to pull mine up and take it for a spin. What bands have covered the song Sweet Dreams? Oh, it's not talking to me, but it does say Sweet Dreams are made of these by the Eurythmics, also covered by Marilyn Manson. Sweet Dreams is also a Beyonce song. Sweet Dreams, Dan Gibson song. Notable as a hit for Patsy Cline. I'm reading this verbatim. Sweet Dreams, LaBouche song. Sweet Dreams, Vamp song. Sweet Dreams by Air Supply from The One That You Love. And I can click to see more items.
Wow.
So I wish I had read that out loud because that'd be a lot better for a podcast. But it did give me a pretty good answer.
All right, I got one. Which actor starred in Star Trek and Star Wars?
Oh, yeah.
According to Science Fiction and Fantasy Stack Exchange, Deep Roy was in Star Wars Episode 6, Return of the Jedi as Droopy McCool. He was also in the 2009 Star Trek as Kinzer. For an added bonus, he was Mr. Sin in the 1977 Doctor Who story arc, The Talons of Wang Chang.
Oh, nice. Oh my gosh.
Very good. Very good. An added bonus.
Google's getting saucy.
Thank you. That was good. I like that.
All right. Google gets points for that.
Okay. Well, speaking of Google, fans of Chrome OS shall rejoice. You are that much closer to being able to have Chrome on almost everything.
Ooh.
Ars Technica says that Google and Asus have partnered up to create a 2.6-ounce HDMI stick with Chrome OS that can be plugged into any monitor or screen, instantly turning it into a Chromebook.
Oh.
Well, not necessarily a Chromebook because it doesn't have a keyboard.
Be a Chrome thing.
A Chrome
screen?
Screen. Chrome screen.
Chrome screen. Catchy.
There you go. That is catchy.
It works.
The stick contains 2 gigabytes of RAM and 16 gigabytes of storage, so kind of itty-bitty. It supports 802.1ac Wi-Fi and Bluetooth 4.0, so that's a kind of a nice statistic.
Wow.
It also has a single USB port.
Because it's a stick.
Because it's a stick. I mean, you know, you can imagine putting two on there. And the stick will reportedly retail for $85. That's kind of cool. The 2 gigabytes of RAM, though.
That's tiny.
You know, you'll be pulling up one tab.
And it's like, on one hand, it is cool. On the other hand, I'm hard pressed. I kind of want one, but I don't know what I'd do with it.
Yeah.
How much did the ones that we have, the Samsung?
I'm not sure off the top of my head. I was just thinking that.
Yeah.
Were they $150?
It doesn't seem.
No. They were $199 the price, but how much RAM did they have?
Oh, gosh. Not enough.
I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, not enough. I'm sure. I don't think it was much more than 2 gigs.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was 2 gigs.
So
it ran okay. I mean, yeah. I used to be able to pull up like 8, and that's when it started going.
Yeah.
But I'm spoiled now. I have 16 gigs, so you know, everything's fast. Yeah, so for a device that you're probably not going to use for the web that much, that's probably not too bad.
Yeah. impress your friends. Hey, guys, yeah. Look at my TV. It's not a Chromebook.
$85 seems a little expensive for anything that you plug into your TV, though.
Yeah,
that's true.
I mean, I was looking at an Apple TV, the new Apple TVs, and they're like $200. And I was like, yeah.
Nah. That's a little steep.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's...
It's Apple.
It's a full-fledged Apple device now. I mean,
it's true.
It has 16 gigs and 30 or 32 gigs of RAM.
But not 4K storage. Resolution, apparently.
Not 4K resolution. Yeah, not to turn this to talk about Apple TVs, but yeah, it's only 1080, which is kind of sad. Hmm. I somehow remembered that they were 4K, but they're not.
Yeah, I don't know. Nope. What do you think the use for this is? That's the, like, I think it's cool, but I just wouldn't know what to do with it.
Back in the old days, before we all had flat screen, high definition screens, I didn't understand what the point of plugging a computer into a TV was.
Mm-hmm.
But now, I mean, I put my computer screen on the TV all the time,
mm-hmm.
and I can read it. And whenever I'm showing, like if I want to show my wife something, I'll just throw it on the Apple TV. So yeah, it kind of makes sense, you know?
It's nice in theory because you're like, oh, I don't have a computer. Well, I've got this thing on my keychain that will turn this TV into a computer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you still need a wireless keyboard, yeah. which you have to happen to have on you.
And yep. Right.
You probably don't. So.
Wait, you guys don't carry one? I always have one.
That explains that bulge in your pocket.
Oh my. It just took a strange turn. Well, I mean, like, I have a Bluetooth keyboard and a Bluetooth mouse that I leave it on my desk. But I could imagine carrying those. But if I'm going to carry those, I'm going to carry a laptop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so why not just plug the laptop into the TV?
I feel like this is targeted at a very specific type of gadget geek.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
Which, if you are that gadget geek listener, no judgment.
Yeah. Good on you.
There you go. Yeah. Ironically, I've been getting a lot of creeper ads about things that you can plug into your TV, like little computers. They're all bigger than this, and they all run about the same price and about the same amount of RAM. They either run like Android or like a stripped-down Linux version.
It'd be awesome to have like a podcast episode where we just have review things that you can plug into your TV.
There's enough of them out there. You could do a whole hour easily.
Well, before we get to Ray's new phone,
there
is one last little thing that we want to mention. Have you guys heard about this new Star Trek TV show?
Star Trek.
I haven't heard about it.
I was teasing with the whole Star Trek Star Wars thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that was good. That was good. Yeah, you all are probably very excited about the new Star Trek TV show that has recently been announced.
Mm-hmm.
I know that Ray and Tom and myself, we all are.
I'll admit I'm hesitant, and I'll talk more about that in a minute.
Well, the Hollywood Reporter claims that the show will not, as you might expect, be airing on regular network TV for the most part. While the pilot episode will indeed air on CBS, the regular episodes will stream on CBS All Access and will require a $5.99 monthly subscription to view. Yeah. CBS All Access includes CBS Feed, which as of right now includes 85 shows, according to IT World. Some shows do appear to include commercials, that could happen with this new Trek show. And that's slated to appear in January 2017, it looks like.
Hmm.
So we still have a little while.
Yeah. As a Star Trek fan, as a pretty passionate Star Trek fan, I've literally seen everything.
Yeah.
The animated series?
No, I have not seen the animated. I've seen a couple episodes. No, you're right. I admit it. I've seen a few episodes of the animated.
For shame, Ray.
I am pretty sure I've seen all the original series. I'm not 100% positive.
I have not.
I have definitely seen everything since Encounter at Farpoint. Everything that's come out since then, which was the pilot episode of Next Gen. Every movie, even every episode of Enterprise. People like I'm that big a deal. But you're right. Animated series. I am a failure. I'll get on Netflix and do that right now. As a Star Trek fan. I am offended.
You're offended.
I'm offended.
Okay.
because I feel like this is a ploy to sell CBS All Access subscriptions.
Yeah. Well, yes, it's clearly a ploy to sell CBS All Access subscriptions.
But I feel like, from what I've seen, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If CBS All Access gave me, I don't know, all access to their shows, mm-hmm. that would be worth it. I love The Big Bang Theory, but I stopped watching it in the third season because some stuff happened in my life. I haven't been able to catch up with it since. And yeah, I know it's not a real serial. You can live without it. I mean, it's very episodic. Mm-hmm. You can watch one episode and enjoy it, and I have. But I don't like watching it like that. I like watching everything in order.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of OCD with my television watching. I like to watch everything in order in binges. And because of that, I have no idea what's going on with Sheldon and Leonard. I don't know. So seriously, if they just gave me access to every episode of Big Bang Theory, I would get that right now, before the new Star Trek show comes out.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing that I, and a lot of Star Trek fans, are concerned about is this going to be Prime Universe, or is this going to be the alternate universe?
The J.J. Abrams universe.
I assume it's going to be the J.J. Abrams universe.
It probably is.
The J.J. Abrams, as I like to call
it. Been rebooted. They said it's not going to be the Enterprise. It's going to be a different cast, a different adventure, which that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love for them to do something crazy like go with a Klingon ship or, mm-hmm. you know, or not Romulan. They've ruined the Romulans. With this new reboot. But, you know, something like that, where they actually did something really different, but it was still in the Star Trek universe.
Hmm.
But we'll see. I don't know. Are you guys excited about it?
I'm excited. I think, you know, Star Trek is meant to be a TV show. The movies are fine, but I love it. You know, I feel like it shines as a TV show. That's where it started. And explore all the kind of crazy, deep sci-fi themes. It needs to be a TV show.
Yeah.
And I think there's plenty of room for reinvention because, you know, there's always been a lot of, you know, time-traveling, parallel universe stuff in Star Trek. So that's par for the course.
Mm-hmm.
I'm super not excited about the CBS All Access stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, what is up with that? Well, like, the only thing I want on CBS All Access is going to be Star Trek. And $5.99 a month is a lot to pay for one show.
That is. Yeah. I mean, you can pay $8 a month for Netflix or Hulu now and get everything on there.
Yeah.
Yep. Although I will say all I've watched is one show on Netflix for the past 3 months.
Yeah.
But I have I mean, I'm not the only one that uses my Netflix account, so that's not true either.
Mm-hmm.
My Netflix account gets plenty of usage.
Yeah.
The other day, I noticed that it had 28 hours of viewing.
Wow. That's pretty good.
That's more than a day in one day. Okay.
Pretty good.
That's a lot of people watching. But yeah, so, yeah, and the other problem is, you know, if you get CBS All Access because of Star Trek, well, they're going to maybe roll out one season at one time, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you'll have, what, 12, 24 episodes?
Oh, then, well, there's no guarantee they're going to do release all the episodes.
Oh,
at once.
No, I doubt it. Yeah. I highly doubt it. This is CBS we're talking about. They're gonna stretch that out.
Yeah,
you're gonna be paying $5.99 per episode, basically, is what you're paying.
Jeez,
when you really look at it, if you don't have another reason to watch CBS All Access, then yeah, you're just gonna be dragging it out.
Now, according to IT World, who actually went, they were like, "What's on All Access? We're gonna go ahead and subscribe now and see what's on there."
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of CBS stuff. They said there are 85 shows. It did include some classics, like you can get access to Cheers. You can watch all the Cheers with no commercials, actually. That didn't have commercials on it, they said.
Which I believe is on Netflix.
Oh, okay. Well, but it's also on CBS All Access.
Yeah.
Let's see. You know, so there, you know, there's some classics on there.
I mean, and Star Trek, Star Trek Next Generation, Star Trek Voyager, Star Trek Enterprise, and Star Trek Deep Space Nine are all on there.
Hmm. Yeah.
I'm assuming it's the entire show. No, it's not. According to this, 79. Okay, yeah. So, 79 episodes of Star Trek, the original series. How many episodes? 177 with Star Trek Next Gen. Okay, so, yeah. Or you can watch one episode for free.
Yeah. You can also watch Twilight Zone, Perry Mason, who doesn't love that. There's the
Wings.
Supergirl, Limitless.
Wings. Wow.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the Victoria's Secret Fashion Show.
Oh.
And the Academy, Sean, are you paying attention? The Academy of Country Music Awards.
Oh, I'll pass. Now, I will say this is, you know, it's cool that they're doing something new with Star Trek. That's awesome. I will say I'm not as big of a fan as Ray and Tom. I like them just fine.
It's true.
You know, I like a lot of the movies. I enjoy the newer movies as well. You know, people, some, I know that's controversial, but I do. I have to say, more than this, I'm more excited about Mystery Science Theater 3000 coming back.
That's right.
Because they just did a Kickstarter, and it was successful, and they're going to produce at least 3 new episodes.
That's awesome.
So I'm excited about that.
I'm confused about how, sorry to change it back, but I'm confused about how there's 177. I couldn't remember how many episodes of Next Gen there are, but I'm getting in two different locations. One says 176, and one says 178, and CBS says 177, so...
It probably depends
they're probably
on
like
how
combining,
you count.
Yeah,
like a two-parter.
The last episode, the finale, I mean, it's basically one episode that's 2 hours, but you could technically count it as a two-parter.
Sure, sure, that makes sense.
You know.
And but you can stream it to Roku, Android, Apple TV, and Chromecast, so... Yeah.
Well, not great news for us geek fans, that's all I'm saying. Hey, let's talk about that iPhone 6S.
Okay, so... This beautiful phone is mine now because of Sam's Club.
Sam's Club.
Oh. So you guys know I've talked about how I was not expecting to get a new phone.
I'm kind of surprised about this.
Yeah, so Sprint apparently does still offer 2-year contracts.
Okay.
So I was my wife recently became a Sam's Club member. And we got an email about a special deal they were doing. They're basically spreading out Black Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And they had it for $100 off, which is a really good deal.
That's a good deal for an iPhone.
That is. Yeah. So that brought the price of a 64 gig, or a 64 gig, which is what I got, down to $199. Because we weren't going to get a 16 gig for $199 because that's impossible to use. It's worthless.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, well, and we're certainly not going to lease it. And we really didn't want to do the whole payment plan thing. So when we found that out, I was looking at it and I was like, well, how much can I sell my 5S for? We got 32 gig 5S and then we can sell it for $200, $250.
Whew.
Like we might actually make money off of upgrading.
Nice.
So I was like, yeah. So I'm going to be jailbreaking my 5S and getting that thing on eBay really soon.
Awesome.
So right now I have 2, but it's only because I'm not dual wielding on purpose. I don't think it'd make much sense to dual wield with 2 iPhone devices.
Well, it has been strange. You've been walking around with like gun holsters, one in each side.
No. I got a gold one, which we were talking about before, because I found out that gold has a higher resale value than the other colors. And I always would get the black or slate gray or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was looking at it, you know, thinking about selling the 5S, I was like, man, I wish I'd gotten a gold one. And I was like, oh, I could get a gold one now. But I never expected to actually be able to get it.
Yeah.
But yeah, actually, me and Amber were able to get, she got rose gold and I got gold.
Hmm.
So I'm going to put it in a black case anyway, so who cares, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's been
bling.
Really, yeah, a little bling. A little bling on the edges. It's I like it. It's kind of nice. I do really like the phone itself. You know, it has a new Touch ID sensor.
Mm-hmm.
And it is ridiculously fast.
Yeah.
Like, it is so fast that I forget that it has Touch ID. And I'll push, like, with my finger that I don't have programmed in, and I'll be like, what's going on? Why won't it open?
Yeah.
Like, because it's just, I just press the home button and it opens.
Yeah.
I haven't had a chance to use Apple Pay yet. That's one of the features I was most excited about getting. Because my bank, you have to call them and verify that, and I haven't had a chance to do it yet. The one feature I thought was going to be the most overlooked and... not used feature is the 3D touch, or as they call it with the watch, it was force touch. And I was completely right. I have not used it one single time.
Yeah.
I have thought about doing it and I've done it like to test it to make sure it works. And I just never think about it when I'm actually doing an action.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I push hard on messages, I get new messages and the 3 people that I contact the most will pop up. But when I'm actually sending a text message, I don't think about that.
Yeah.
I just, you know, open messages, hit new message, and go from there.
Now, for people that don't know what 3D Touch is, like, how would you describe it? Like,
It's like pushing harder.
Yeah.
It's like you're pushing through it, maybe. Basically, they added the technology to recognize how hard you're pushing on the screen. Now, as someone who has used technology and been passionate about technology for a long time, it's really counterintuitive to me because
to push harder,
you shouldn't push hard on your devices. It's not going to do something if you push harder on it. Now it actually does. And it's weird. Like, we just got a new TV, and my daughter, I saw fingerprints all over it because she was pushing on the screen to make it make colors.
No.
Because she was bending the LEDs. I was like, honey, don't do that because you'll break it. And I feel the same way about this. Now, I've gotten used to putting my fingers all over screens, but not pushing hard. And it does, if you, like, push hard real quickly, it'll go right to it. But if you just, like, push gentle and kind of push into it, it'll go to it also. So it's kind of like, you know, your grandparents or whatever pushing on a device, you know, hard. You're like, it's not working. Okay.
It's weird because it reminds me, you know, like how the big difference, but a clear difference between a Mac and a PC is the mouse. Because the PC mouse has a right mouse button.
Right.
And you have to right-click on things, and you have this extra context menu that you got to dig into to find things. And it's not as user-friendly.
Yeah.
Like, it's this whole other world, and the Mac's all been like, you know, we don't need that. We put everything up front.
Yeah.
And if it has to be in a context menu, then clearly you shouldn't need it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is like a context menu.
It really is.
That's
yeah.
what that is.
It really is. It's a another way
you're
to interface with
on
it.
Your iPhone.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah.
Ah!
I mean, although I will say, in PC's defense, Macs did eventually adopt the right click.
Yeah.
I mean, we have right click now on Mac.
Okay.
But it's different. Like, there's no button.
It's better.
No, it's really not. It's worse. you know, for a while there, you had to, like, hit command click to make it do things. But then they finally added it where, like, on the touchpad, you just use two fingers to tap.
Oh, okay.
And on the Magic Mouse, you do actually click the right part of the mouse.
Okay.
So. But yeah, you're right. It is that not clearly easy to use interface that adds something for power users, but grandma's never going to notice this. Never going to see this. Now, the one thing that I hated about iOS 9 that I love on the iPhone 6S is the multitask screen. You and me have talked about this before.
Yeah.
The old multitask was like cards, and the cards were across the back, and you swiped back and forth to go to your cards. The new one is like sheets of paper. So you switch, slide back and forth between them. And yeah, it does look pretty, but on the 5S, it looks horrible.
It does.
It makes me a little nauseous, the motion of it. And the reason why, I think, is because you did the same motion, the double tap, to go to the multitask. But on the 6S, because of the force touch, you can just swipe from the left and swipe the cards across.
Oh, okay.
So you push in from the left, and it just swipes them across.
Hmm.
Like you're flipping through a deck of cards.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of how it feels. So it actually makes a lot more sense. That is a lot more intuitive. But otherwise, you know, it's pretty much the same. The one feature I love, but I don't think I'm going to use that often, is the 4K video. Because I don't have anything that has 4K on it. I mean,
not your Apple TV. Oh,
that's actually what I was thinking about. I was like, oh well, that won't do me any good. And I don't think the MacBook Pro has 4K capability in it. So
my laptop does.
Yours
it's a
does.
PC.
Yeah, whatever.
Just FYI,
I forget what my resolution is on the MacBook Pro, but I don't think it does 4K. But yeah, so I'm like, well, 4K video's kind of cool, but I don't really have anything that'll take advantage of that. Live photos are pretty cool, though.
Oh, yeah.
We had a thing at church the other day.
Are all the photos it takes live, or do you have to, like,
no,
set something?
You can turn it on or off. So there's a little button at the top that says live, off, live on. And so if I take a picture of you here, smile for me. Oh, I burst shot. Dang it. I'm such a grandpa.
Like burst shot.
So yeah, so I just took a picture of you, and if I hold the thing now, it'll show you the motion before and after the shot.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool. It's not amazing.
How much larger are those photos than normal photos? Yeah.
I haven't had a chance to look at that yet. I gotta look at that and find out.
Because they're gonna be larger.
Yeah, I mean they have to be larger than a normal picture would be. So.
And I just have to guess like, that's not gonna work if you get that off of your phone, correct?
Right. I don't know if there is any devices or any software that'll run that.
Because I noticed that, like, with slow-mo video on my 5S, like, I took a slow-mo video and then, you know, plugged it into my computer to put some stuff off of it or get some stuff off of it. And I just you know, decided to click on that just to see what it looked like. Normal video.
Yep.
So
normal frame rate.
Yeah.
It's weird how that works, yeah, because it does come out in the normal frame rate. Now, I'm looking at the Photos app, and I don't see anything that shows me about live videos or live pictures. Let me see if I can find the picture that we just took this weekend, because we just got it this weekend. So I should have, oh, there's a video right there of Tom, and I don't see any way to look at the live photo version of it. So, yeah. I don't know.
You know, I think the real lesson there is that you should only ever use your iPhone.
Yeah, I have to constantly use my iPhone. Yeah,
that's what they want.
So other than that, I mean, I like the design of the 6 series. I love that I'm still on the S plan.
That's right.
It's like 4S, 5S, now the 6S.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great phone. The audio quality, wow.
Really?
The audio quality is so much better than the 5S.
Oh.
It was ironic because I was talking to my mother-in-law. We were at Sam's finishing up things. And it sounded about the same. And then I moved the phone down to where the earpiece was actually aligned with my ear. And I was like, oh, it's like you're standing there. It's really, the audio quality is really amazing.
Nice.
They improved that a lot.
Not bad. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Oh, and the front-facing flash, that was one thing that they added.
Yeah.
So when you take a selfie, it actually uses the screen as a flash.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's clever.
They like engineered
that's
it to be even
clever.
Brighter.
That's legit.
Yeah, it's really cool. I was disappointed. I thought that the front-facing camera shot 1080p video.
It does not.
But it only does 720p video. So,
man.
Still 720s, it's good. It's good enough. No, it's good video.
Joking. Not good enough. Not 4K. Don't care.
Yeah, I thought it was 4K on the back and 1080 on the front. But no, it's 4K on the back and 720 on the front.
All right. Well, awesome, Ray. Thanks for sharing your phone with us.
It's a lot of fun. I like it.
Cool. Well, let's wrap it up. I think that's all the stories we have for this week.
Yep.
That's true.
If you have a suggestion or a comment for the show, what can you do?
You can call us and leave us a voicemail. It's 1-888-972-9868. It stands for something. Why Raw Tot?
I believe that's what we decided on.
Yeah.
Why Raw Tot?
Or just 972-9868. Or you can always send us an email to feedback@deemable.com. And don't forget to help us decide which stories we talk about on the show. Go to our subreddit page and submit a story and vote other stories up or down. It's deemable.com/reddit. We'll take you there. I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
I'm Sean Birch.
And this is Deemable Tech. Now let's take a look at this week's rundown.
That rundown. That rundown.
This has been a production of WJCT Public Broadcasting. To find out more, visit us online at wjct.org.